Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and thank you for listening to this special episode of Rob Has a Podcast. Today, we are continuing our Black Voices of Survivor series, and we are going to talk with Julia Carter from Survivor Edge of Extinction. I'm very much looking forward to talking with Julia. I've never had the opportunity to sit down and talk with her about her experience on Survivor, so I am really looking forward to that. And then we're also going to talk, actually, up first, we're going to have a short interview with Jatia Taylor, who from Survivor Cagayan. She is the person who has been putting together this Tribes and Tribulations panel, which is going to be on Friday night. She is also one of the people behind this petition, this anti-racism petition for Survivor, which we're going to talk about as well. So we've got Jatia coming up, and then I'll talk with Julia Carter in this episode of the podcast. On Wednesday night, we had our first Black Voices of Survivor roundtable. Sean Rector had called me up last week, and he said, hey, I want to put together this panel of all of the Black Survivor alumni. We'll invite everybody who wants to come out and talk about all these different issues. And when Sean Rector calls you up, the answer is yes to whatever he wants to do. So I was very excited that he reached out to me, that we had the opportunity to do that. Thought that was a really powerful conversation. That is up in our podcast feed. And also you can check out the YouTube video to see all these great Survivor players who came out to talk about what it's like to be a Black person playing the game of Survivor. And then last week, I spoke with Jamal Shipman. He's also going to be one of the voices on the Tribes and Tribulations panel, which is going to be on Friday night. And we had a really great conversation about what he's seeing out there in the world. That was a lot more focused on the outside world as opposed to Survivor. But of course, it's Jamal. You know it's going to be great. If you missed that podcast, go ahead and check that out. But up first here today, I get to catch up with an old friend of the podcast, Jatia Taylor. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to have this woman with me back on the podcast. It's been a minute since I caught up with the great Jatia Taylor, Jatia Woo-woo! PhD. Jatia,
yes.
How are you?
I appreciate the bell in. Ding, ding.
Yes.
So I am super excited to be here. Thank you for having me. I think I was here last in 2014. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah. 2014 was a fun year for reality shows.
Absolutely.
But we did get to have some fun back then. But it is great to see you. Jatia, what have you been up to for people who have not been following that closely over the last couple of years?
No problem. So after my glorious run on Survivor Cagayan, where I had some infamous moments, I really got busy with life. So I actually was in Chicago. I moved to D.C. I got married. I shot two kids out of my vagina and I moved back to Chicago. So been very busy. I've been working in national security and intelligence and yes, helping to secure the nation with my brain. So, you know, I've been on the job. So you can be sure that other countries have feared the U.S. because I was on it. So
wow. Jatia, how old are your babies?
I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. They might make a cameo at any given moment because they are very hard to contain. So
yes.
And you have a 4 and a 6-year-old, right?
Yes.
A boy, girl?
Two boys here.
Oh, yeah. Payback.
Yeah.
Payback, Papa Rob. Yeah. So you know how it is.
Yeah. But Jatia, it's been very fun to see more of you recently because I know you also just played in the Survivor Sequester game. And yeah, you had a deep run.
I did. So I was, it was my first appearance after a very long time. Being a federal employee, I couldn't really get involved with a lot of Survivor things, but this was kind of my first foray. And I did well. I was super excited. It was nice to meet a lot of the different characters, older and newer in Survivor. Kelly Wentworth, Abby, who I love. I'm still waiting for us to do like a bitches be tripping podcast. I don't know. We'll put that in, you know, where people call in and we just insult them. I'm ready for it. Kellen was amazing. Yeah, BBC, bitches be tripping, or, you know, something like that. Think about it, Rob. That'd be awesome. Okay. And so I kind of fell in love with Survivor all over again because Survivor has awesome people. And so I just want to tell your listeners, you only hear a little bit of the awesomeness of the Survivor players. Like, these people are freaking amazing. So there's so much to them. And really, I was actually just, I met some of the people from David versus Goliath on their reunion. And now I'm like, I'm going to watch that season. You know, between Natalie Cole and Davey and Carl with his smooth voice, I was like, I could just put him as my alarm clock and be there.
Yeah.
And everybody, and they were just so welcoming and open, which, you know, I kind of didn't get right when I got off of my season. So I'm excited to be here. And actually that has, you know, that welcome and getting to know a lot of the other survivors has actually led me to get involved in a certain petition. Have you heard about this, Rob?
Yes. No, this is very interesting. So there is a new petition that had come out on Monday of this week, which is a petition for anti-racism action by Survivor Entertainment Group, which talks about some of the goals that that this petition would like to see have in terms of the casting and the production of Survivor. Can you tell me a little bit more about how what this group is trying to accomplish?
Yes. So basically, we just want people who come, especially people of color who come on Survivor, to have an equal chance of being a hero or an idiot. You know, we just want equal hero idiocy proportions. Everybody knows when you come on a reality show that, you know, it's up in the air of how things are going to work out. But again, like I said, all the Survivor players are awesome people. Rob, you're awesome. You got this whole universe. Everybody has their thing. That's why they're cast. But it just seems like disproportionately people of color get the story that's not favorable. So I just like to see that. And I think that if you have more people behind the camera who understand stories that relate to people of color, they'll be able to fully kind of pitch and tell those stories and sell those stories. So my good example is like Beyonce and Coachella, right?
Yeah.
So Beyonce had this wonderful show at Coachella, and all of that she drew from Black culture, right? And I think if somebody would have said, oh, we're going to do a halftime show from a, you know, HBCU, people would have been like, nah, we ain't going to do that. But Beyonce took it and, you know, she understood the how it would resonate with the crowd and sold it. So just more stories like that. And you know, give us a chance because we're awesome. All the survivors are awesome.
Where's the best place that people can find the petition that they should definitely sign? I signed it last night and I wanted to help support this cause because I think that what the petition is asking for, I think is pretty modest.
I agree. We just want to have people of color in front and behind the screen. So again, like we're asking for 30% of the production crew, you know, cameramen, executives, that sort of thing, to have people of color so they can understand that, to take better care when they're telling their stories, to take better care of the people of color and give them opportunities after Survivor, which, you know, becomes super lucrative. Rob, you know, right? So, you know, just to have us and people of color have that opportunity as well. So you can go to JatiaPhD.com/TNT. There is a link that will lead you to the panel that we're actually having on Friday. And also you can sign the petition.
Yes.
And again, you can go on Twitter. Rob has retweeted it, right? So you can go, there you go.
Yes.
So you can see, get the links.
And we'll have a link in the show notes as well. Jatia, could you also tell us about, I know you're going to be part of the Tribes and Tribulations panel that's coming on Friday. Can you tell us what that is and how people can check it out?
Sure. Again, you can go to JatiaPhD.com/TNT and you can get the information on the panel. It is Friday at 6:30 and we have 7 different survivors and they're going to be moderated. And it's going to be Wendell, Russ, Ramona from season 1, me, Bryce, Julia, and Jamal, and we're just going to be talking about our experiences on panel. Survivor. Yeah, it is. I mean, the moderator is going to have their work cut out for them. So, and we're just talking, you know, having an honest conversation about how we feel and how we can move forward and how the fans can help. And also, you'll get to see all your favorite survivors. Well, some of your favorite survivors, because Rob's not on there. That's the next panel.
Yeah. Jatia, well, I always love to catch up. And I hope that after you watch Survivor David versus Goliath, maybe you want to come on and talk about it.
Absolutely. I plan on being very involved. So you haven't seen the last of me, Rob C.
Yeah. All right. Jatia, is there anything else that you want to talk about? I want to know more about what's going on JatiaPhD.com.
Well, so my advocacy has pivoted just because of the current climate. But again, I like doing outreach to young ladies because I was once a lonely nerd with nobody to guide them. And so I like to let young ladies and people of color know that they are nerds out there that look like them. And, you know, they can heart nerds too.
Yes. All right. Jatia, thank you so much. Be sure to check out the panel on Friday and follow at Jatia PhD on Twitter. Jatia, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Can't wait to hear and see everything you got going on. Smooches.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Jatia Taylor back here on the podcast. I do hope that Jatia wants to talk about Survivor David versus Goliath. Would love to get her takes on that season of Survivor. Basically, whatever Jatia wants the podcast about, I'm here for it. I'm ready to go whenever Jatia says she wants to come back on and talk with me. All right. So we have another great guest that we're going to talk to on this episode of the podcast. So I had not ever podcast before with Julia Carter, but this is actually now 2 days in a row that I'm talking to Julia Carter on a podcast. So very excited to have here with us from Survivor, The Edge of Extinction, the great Julia Carter. Julia, how are you?
I am great. How are you? This is 2 times in a row this week. I'm
back
feeling
to back.
Good.
Back to back. Back to back. Yes, I really appreciated you being part of the roundtable that we did on Wednesday night. And I'm very glad that we're able to finally catch up and hear a more long form interview with you, too.
Absolutely. I feel like it's been a long time coming. And I think that, you know, I obviously have a lot to contribute and I'm very vocal and I'm grateful to you for allowing me to be here and speak to you and the RHAP community about, you know, my experience and Survivor and everything. So thank you.
Okay. Before we talk about Survivor and your experience, any updates for the listeners for everything that's going on in your personal life?
Yeah, sure. So recently, this past week, I just started my third year of medical school. So 3 out of 4 years coming up on graduating in the next 2. So I'm really excited, especially as a first generation college student to make it to this point and, you know, soon be a doctor. That's like a huge, you know, one of my biggest accomplishments. So that's kind of what I have going for me right now, getting back into the hospital post kind of quarantine life. Mm-hmm. And finding my place as a medical student in the medical team and with the appropriate, you know, protective wear and all of that. So just a huge adjustment. You know, obviously life in general right now is a huge adjustment. So that's kind of what the major deal is for me going on personally.
Julia, has your schooling been affected a lot because of the pandemic?
Yeah, it has. So, gratefully for my class, it wasn't too affected because we were already done for the year, basically. But the last month or two has been delayed. So we have not been able to get back into the hospital. I am in the New Jersey area. So I'm in Newark, New Jersey, right outside of New York City, major hotspot. So our school has delayed us going back into the hospital until this week. For fear of, you know, just exposing medical students to COVID. Mm-hmm. So it was just unnecessary, you know, risk. So we were delayed about 2 months getting back to school. So everything's been kind of virtual and learning medicine virtual really isn't it. So I'm excited to get back into the hospital and actually, you know, touch patients and talk to patients and see them. So really excited about that.
You know, I was reading up on your, you had written a blog post that got a lot of attention following The Edge of Extinction. And I was reading up on your story about your experience with Survivor. But, the thing that really, I was struck by, the part of the story that I had not really paid much attention to in the past, was that I knew your father had passed away. I didn't realize how young you were, and I didn't realize how young that he was at the time.
Right. So yeah, let me just kind of go back to the basics and really introduce myself for a lot of the listeners who, I feel like frankly didn't get to yeah. see or know me whatsoever on the show. So hi, I'm Julia Carter, but yeah, so I'll try to keep it as brief as possible, but, I was born on an Army base in Washington State. Both of my parents were military veterans. And we then moved to Illinois, Decatur, Illinois, which is where my father's family is from. So it's a predominantly Black community. Also, my parents are interracial and in an interracial relationship. So my father is Black, my mother is white. So, especially in a time, I don't know if you guys are familiar of Loving versus Virginia, it's only been legal to be interracially wed for the last 50 years. Mm-hmm. So I am a product of a interracial, couple. So we lived in Decatur, Illinois until I was 7, at which point my father unfortunately passed. He struggled with heart problems and heart disease, and he had a heart attack at age 42 and passed. So my mother was kind of stuck to raise 3 girls on her own. And so she resorted to moving back to where she's from, which is Pennsylvania, northeastern Pennsylvania. So from very rural northeastern Pennsylvania, for any of the office watchers, nearest major city is Wilkes-Barre Scranton area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we moved there, and that's predominantly where I was raised. So with my mother and kind of my white side of the family. And I would always go back to Illinois basically every summer or whenever I had time off to go for holidays and whatnot. And I share that because that is a major contributing factor of who I am, and really speaks to kind of us being shaped by how we're raised and how it informs kind of how we see the world and the context in which we are brought up. So for me, I was brought up, balancing these two worlds of a Black community and a white community, and really navigating both of those spaces with family members and friends and schools. And so that really informed a lot of how I moved through the world and how I've interacted with people and how I've really got a good grasp on how to speak to people and what really resonates with different communities and in a way in which I can be heard.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a little bit about me. I also will preface, me going on to the blog post and everything with saying that in no way am I a historian or an expert on these matters. I'm simply, a Black woman, and I just share my lived experiences and my opinions as that. And so, anything that I can contribute to productive conversation is kind of what I try to do. So fast forward to blog post. Yes. After my Survivor experience coming home, and seeing the show, I'm sure a lot of survivors will probably agree that, you have the game itself and then you have the post game, which is the viewing process and seeing the edits and kind of seeing how it's taken in by the audience, which is a completely different, perspective than playing the game itself and being in Fiji. So after it all wrapped and after the finale wrapped, I was very jaded. I'm not going to lie. I was very jaded about my Survivor experience because I felt like not only did I get the short end of the stick a lot in many different cases, but that no one else had to even think about some of the things that I had to think about or had to be, living through on the island. And it was just, I was damn, I didn't expect at all for my once in a lifetime adventure to encompass a lot of what it did. So I was jaded and I was I love this show. I've watched this show for many years. So the blog post for me was an outlet.
Yeah.
I did get asked, you know, to do some press and to do some podcasts and whatnot, but I was very within myself. Like, I wanted to tell my story unfiltered, in a way in which I didn't feel like I had to be censored in any way, or I had to think about a moderator or a host and them asking me questions. And I really wanted to just get my emotions out on the paper, out on the, you know, site in any way, and then just wipe my hands of it. Obviously, it didn't really wipe my hands of it, because a lot of attention was garnered as a result of the post. But that was my intention, to kind of just tell my truth and move on, because I had a life to get back to. Survivor was not my life. Like I said, it was a once in a lifetime adventure. And I kind of wanted to get back to my life and not hold on to any negative emotions. So I dropped the blog, and then it was, you know, it spread like wildfire. So, so that was that.
Okay. Well, I think we'll cover all of those areas. If I could just go back to you growing up, was it your father that was a Survivor fan, or was
it
your mother?
It was both. It was our whole family. So we kind of just watch and just, I was kind of like the ringleader. Like, after a while, I would just sit there, and after everyone else kind of fell off, I'd be the only one there on Wednesday nights. But it was definitely a family affair. It actually aired after my father's passing. So it was an entire, like, me, my mom, my sisters.
Yeah.
And then everybody kind of dropped off, and I was left.
Yeah. I was just really, stunned, because I knew, and it came up on the show, and I'm sure not to the degree which you would have liked, at the edge of extinction, about your dad. And I knew from your pregame press that your dad had died, but I thought that your dad had died recently, or when you were an adult. I never knew that part of the story, that you were so young, and it really hits home for me, because this fall I'll be 42 years old, and my son will be, my oldest son will be 7 years old. And that's, so really just like, wow, such a baby.
It puts it into perspective, right? And a lot of people who I interact with, when, especially males who are around that age, are like, wow, like, I consider myself young, you know, you're young.
Yeah.
So it's like, that is a very young age to you know, be afflicted with a health issue that you know, ultimately leads to your death, and then to have young children. So I was 7, my sister was a year younger. So it was like, it was a lot. And although I was so young, as I'm sure you could relate to your son, like, they're not babies. Like, they know what's going on. They know when dad isn't around for an extended period of time. So for me, like, the concept of death maybe wasn't fully grasped, but I knew that he wasn't there anymore. And, you know, it only took a year or two more to realize, like, it was a permanent thing. It came up very late on my Survivor experience, but yes, I was young. And that was kind of why the edge of extinction for me was so powerful, because even into my adulthood at 25 years old, I was out there, I was carrying a lot of that grief and a lot of that healing that needed to still occur with me 17 years later. So it was definitely powerful to let some of that go and to really free myself of a lot of stuff that wasn't in my control, and a lot of stuff that, you know, happened in childhood that haunted me essentially for the rest of kind of my life. And Edge of Extinction, oddly enough, helped me get all that out.
What is it about the Edge of Extinction that brings out those things?
Oh man, it's like, the Edge of Extinction is literally, it's like solitary confinement.
Yeah.
Basically, I've never been, hopefully never have to go, but if I had to imagine what it's like, it's probably the, like, solitary confinement. It's just, there's people there, but, you know, I don't know these people. They're strangers. They're people that, you know, we all got voted out of the game recently. We're miserable. We know there's only one chance to get back in. The odds are not in our favor. So it was just this place where you had to confront a lot of demons, because there was absolutely nothing else to do. Of course, there's the looming hope of getting back in the game, but that's so far out of grasp. and you don't have the normal day-to-day nuances of the game to distract you. You don't have anything to distract you, really. We were not nearly getting as many, you know, missions and notes as the season 40 crew were. So yeah, it was just this place where you had to sit there and, you know, talk through with yourself how you're feeling and confront the demons and the things that maybe you were sweeping under the rug for many years or many decades. And for me, I embraced it. And not everybody did, you know. Some people definitely just huddled into fetal position and cried all, you know, all of their experience. But for me, I definitely knew the power that the Edge of Extinction held for me. And I, you know, faced it head on. And I actively tried every day to wring out whatever kind of advantages that the Edge of Extinction could offer me in my personal life to take back. Because if I wasn't going to win the game, best believe I was going to take something back with me in my personal life that would help me be a better person. And I feel like I did that. So I'm grateful to that little patch of land for, you know, helping me to confront a lot of stuff I was carrying.
And you and I have a mutual friend who speaks the world of you that you spent time with on the Edge of Extinction in Ream. Yes. Yes.
I love her. I love her, dude. She is special. Ream is so special. As I'm sure you know, like, she is just one of a kind. She's one of those people who you do not, you know, you do not come across another Ream in your life. So fortunately for me, she's a lifelong friend.
Yeah.
My family and her family have become family. And thankfully, yeah, she's stuck with me and she's not going anywhere. But yeah, she helped me. And when I talk about the power of the Edge of Extinction, it's even more powerful when you have a partner that's there with you and challenging you and, you know, helping you confront some of those demons if you're scared to confront them yourself. And Ream was that partner for me. You know, we helped each other. We counseled each other. We cried tears with each other. And, you know, she was my rock for sure on that island. So without her, I'm not sure I would even be, you know, the person I am today. So like I always say, all hail Queen Ream.
Julia, tell me, how did you even then decide that to go from somebody who was a viewer of Survivor to somebody who wanted to be on the show? And can you talk a little bit about your experience going through casting?
Yeah, so I think it was the Millennials versus Gen X season, and I remember thinking like, "Hey, I'm a millennial, like, and I could do a lot of what they're doing." And you know, I was of age finally to apply, and I was just so captivated by it that it turned from like, oh, this is just a reality show that you watch every week to, but wait, like at the end of the day, those are people too. And they have to get on that show somehow too. And like, if they could do it, I could do it. And there's not many of them who look like me. So like, let me give it a try. So, you know, I sat down at my living room table and basically submitted a little short video of why I should be cast. And it's actually funny now. And I think I wrote about it in the blog post that, and I'm mindful of this now moving forward, but in my casting video, I even used stereotypes as a joke. So I said in the casting tape, like, I know I'm a young Black woman, but I assure you that I can swim. Mm-hmm. And like, I cringe now thinking about it because I, like, you know, I didn't know the power in that at that time. And I'm, you know, I'm even, I would say, a little regretful of using that. And, you know, now as an adult, I'm more mindful of the power of stereotypes and using them in humor and whatnot. But yeah, so I sat down, I recorded the tape, I submitted it off to the universe, and I didn't hear back for like a year and a half. And out of nowhere, I got a call from a California number and it was like, hey, we're going through old footage. And I was like, this is a joke. Somebody's pranking me. They know I love this show. Yeah. And it was like April too. So I was like, April Fools. But no, it was real. And it was a casting director and they were just like, you know, come out. Like, things are moving really fast. We like you. We like your energy. If you're interested still, we know it's been a long time. Like, we'd like to fly you to LA. So it just happened in rapid speed. And I went out to LA and, you know, went through all the rounds of casting and made it. And then I got the call literally within like 3-4 weeks that I was heading to Fiji. So it was just kind of one of those things that I say, like, the universe, the stars, God, whatever you believe in, like things line up sometimes, and timing is everything. And I feel like, although I do think that diversity probably played a part in my getting cast a little later than when I submitted my casting tape, the door of opportunity for me at the time that it did open in 2018 was the perfect timing in my life, because I had this 3-month window of opportunity between schooling to go to Fiji and to film. So it definitely aligned. I was there for a reason, and it happened the way it did. So I found myself on the beach shortly thereafter.
Did you feel like that you needed to alter yourself in any way to go through casting to sort of give casting what they wanted? Sabrina talked about this on the roundtable last night, that she felt like that they were looking for, you know, a bigger personality in casting. But ironically, that's not the way that you would want to play the game when you're out there on the island.
It's interesting because I did, but I also didn't. So I say like half and half. I don't consider myself a big personality whatsoever. And I didn't bring, you know, I didn't bring any fraudulent kind of energy into my casting that isn't normal of me. My casting producer was very direct with me of, be yourself, because you know, we're going to cast people for who they are. And I didn't want to be something that I wasn't going to be able to uphold on the island. So I definitely just brought myself to the table. I will say that I know how to code switch. That's how I'll put it. I know how to, you know, move in spaces in which I can read easily what people want of me. So in casting, not that I was, you know, watering myself down in any way, but I can tell that they love the story of my father. So that is something I talked more about. Or, you know, that is something that brings emotion out of me. So it's the part that kind of like, if that's what you're asking about, that's what you're going to get from me. And there were other parts of me that they weren't so interested in hearing about. So it was just like, you know, like I know how to move in those spaces, and I knew I could kind of get the sense that I wasn't going to be a big type of personality, and that they weren't necessarily looking to, categorize me into some of those typical Black woman stereotypes. So I didn't feel any pressure to, you know, force myself into one of those. So it was kind of like, but not really. I feel like I was pretty much myself, through casting, and yeah, like I didn't try to force it.
Can you talk a little bit more about code switching? Because I think it's something that maybe not all the listeners know what that is. And I think that it's something that, especially when you talk about the game of Survivor, like, is that a really useful skill to be able to have when you're headed into a game like Survivor?
Absolutely. So if I had to, like I said, I'm no expert, but if I had to kind of define code switching in my own words, it's basically adapting your demeanor and your word choice and vernacular, and basically your entire body language and I guess professionalism around the people who you are with in that moment. So that's why we say kind of code switching, because it switches depending on who you're talking to and in what context you're speaking to them in. So for me, this is something that I've always been aware of. Like I said, I come from a biracial background. So the Black community has very different culture and you know, words and slang than my white community and my white family. So I'm a professional code switcher in that regard. You know, I know how to work within both of those communities to be received by them. And it's something that's carried well with me into my adulthood, as, you know, the field I'm in medicine is very white male dominated. And it's something that I can't go into, you know, an office or into a meeting with an advisor and, you know, say certain things or use certain slang that they're not even going to know what it means. So even something like, let's spill some tea, you know, like let's gossip, let's spill some tea. If I said that to my faculty members at school, they would be like, what kind of tea are we drinking? Earl Grey, you know, peach, like it would not even be a, it would not even be a thing that they register.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like I have to constantly code switch, depending on who I'm around and the setting that I am in. And that is something that I would say probably every Survivor player does, and the better ones probably do it better. But for Black Survivor players, it's something that in life we have to do. So
yeah.
We certainly have to do it in the game of Survivor. And yeah, so when as a Black Survivor player who hits the beach, you are constantly aware of you know, your space and who is on that island. And, you know, most seasons you are in a minority, a racial minority. So you're constantly aware that the dominant culture is white, and that if you are a Black person, that is not typically your culture, the culture in which you are raised or kind of navigate. So you have to kind of code switch in order to be received by that culture in order to play with you, you know, like they have to receive you in order to want to play with you. And if they don't think that they'll be able to talk to you or connect to you or, you know, reach any kind of commonality or shared ground with you, then you're going to be an early boot, you know, bottom line. So you definitely have to hit your step and code switch well in order to be received. And I think that, you know, the great Survivor players who do that are the ones that are successful at it.
Yeah, it's so much pressure those first couple of days being a minority member. I must imagine to be on a tribe with, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 other white people. And, you know, if you are not doing everything to make them comfortable, it's some sort of like, oh, well, that they weren't cooperating with the group, or they didn't get to, they weren't really trying to get to know us. So it's not even, it's on us. It was something on them.
We hear that a lot, right? That they weren't trying to fit in. They weren't trying to get to know us. And I feel like I hear that almost every season for the person that's casted as like the outlier. And it's just like, what did you guys do to make that person feel included? What did you do to extend an olive branch, knowing that, especially if they're a person of color, that they are already in a place where they are a minority within the minority. So it's like, what did you do to make sure that person felt included on a beach that is not reflective whatsoever of them? So yeah, it's very disheartening to see and to watch kind of season after season as minorities are kind of casted as these outliers who just don't know how to socially you know, assimilate, and who do not know how to integrate into the dynamics of the tribe. And for me, I can spot it from a mile away. I know what that means. And I always just ask myself, well, what did you guys do to make that person feel included? You know, so it's kind of one of those patterns of the game that we all kind of know to exist.
Mm-hmm. So for you, what was the more frustrating experience? Was it the actual being out there on Survivor, or was it the airing of Survivor?
Definitely the airing.
Yeah.
The airing was more frustrating for me. The experience of being on the island, although it was like a double-edged sword. I loved it, but I hated it, and I loved it again. And then it was like, but, you know, there was some shitty experiences, like, but I feel like everybody can say that, right? Unless you win the game, you're going to feel like, oh, like it was just a little crushing to the soul. But the game itself is so fun. You know, it's like, it's so exhilarating. It's such an adventure. And like, I'm so glad I got to do it. And if you ask me if it was rewind to 2017, they're like, you want to go back out on the island? Knowing what I know now, I would still go out there again. But yeah, it was definitely the airing, which I said is kind of the part two of the experience. And that is where what catches a lot of people off guard. That's the part where, you know, you have the experience, the lived adventure in your mind, but everybody, 18 to 20 people, have that lived experience in their mind. And there's absolutely no way for, you know, editing to encompass every single one of those person's perspectives into, you know, the weeks that they have to air the show. So that for me was more frustrating because I felt like, you know, I felt like I definitely was invisible in a sense until my boob episode. And then I felt like, you know, they kind of cast me into one of those stereotypes, like my boob episode. I was finally at my wit's end. I started to get a lot more vocal and frustrated, which everybody on that island was, but that's the one clip you guys got to see most of me. And I was infuriated by that because if you ask any of my castmates, I was one of the most level-headed, one of the most peaceful, low-key people on the island. So it was very frustrating to see how the editing came together and how a lot of what I wanted to go out there and do and represent and portray was not at all captured. And that was frustrating and that was saddening. And that's why I said I kind of came away a little jaded from the experience.
Well, Julia, I feel like that I owe you an apology because I feel like that when it came up during the season, when you were talking about your edit, I wasn't thinking about it in terms of it being, you know, an issue motivated by or having anything to do with race at that time. Mm-hmm. And that I thought of it as, well, I feel like there's a lot of people that, you know, I've heard from many people, people unhappy with their edit. And a lot of times, right. Like, especially a young woman ends up getting lost in the edit, like Chelsea from the season before. And right. People make a big deal of, oh, this purple person, they didn't get any confessionals or anything like that. But what I've, you know, come to understand is that, you know, whatever the motivation was of there not being more of your story told on the show, that the act of not having you out there and then not telling your story is the part that that really ends up being hurtful, because that when I heard stories from young people like you and like Bryce recently on his last Purple Pants podcast, when you talk about when you are, you know, a black person and you're growing up and you see somebody on television and then that person, you know, it doesn't end up getting, you know, their story told. Like it's hurtful for the viewers also.
Right. Yeah. And thank you for saying that and apologizing for that in no way. And you know, like a lot of people, and that's something too, is in the part two of like the viewing back and the editing, it's also, you know, the interactions with the fans and all of that. And the Survivor fan base in and of themselves are a powerhouse and a force to be reckoned with. And they're going to either love you or hate you. And unfortunately for me, I think because I got so lost in the sauce and the editing really didn't capture me, that many people didn't know what to think of me. And there was a lot of assumptions made about who I am and what I was out there doing. And it was like, I wish you guys were able to see more because I was doing more, you mm-hmm. know? And that was one of the most frustrating things as well, is that I felt like people were speaking on something that, you know, like many people, I heard podcast people, you know, article reads, like a lot of people were speaking on who I am as a person. And I'm like, how, you guys, you didn't even get to see me. Mm-hmm. I didn't even get to see me. You know, my family's like, where are you? So that was very frustrating because I felt like, yeah, I did go out there, and especially as one of two black people on my season. And, you know, like I've been very outspoken about how I feel like Keith was, and his edit was done very dirty as well, as far as like, you know, basically portraying the exact stereotype of a black person that can't swim, which is infuriating to watch. Because it's like, why did you guys do that to him? You know, like, why did you even put him in that position and then choose to focus on it? So for me, coming out there as somebody who I felt like was a very good representative of my community and of black women. And, you know, I'm doing a lot in my life and becoming somebody to be, you know, proud of and who could be kind of looked at as a role model. And Jeff used those words himself. So, you know, I felt like I got out there and then it's like, you know, the edit just didn't show any of that. And I felt like you didn't know who I was at all, or even that I was a medical student or, you know, anything, because I wasn't even getting confessionals to show Julia, 25, medical student, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was just like, how are people even going to know who I am? And for me, you know, no shade to my castmates, because they're all, you know, amazing and some of them are doing amazing things, but I feel like I'm doing a hell of a lot in my personal life that could get recognition on a show like that, especially as a minority. So the fact that editors choose the stories to highlight and mine just fell to the wayside, especially as a Black woman, the only Black woman on the season, I felt like it was very unwise. Like I felt like it was in a, you know, beyond just me personally feeling like, damn, they did me dirty. Also, you guys slipped, you fumbled the ball on telling the only Black woman's story and one that has an actual story to tell, but other, you know, focused on other very minor storylines. So I just felt like they could have worked me in. And another thing, you know, that fans don't often, you know, realize is that as players, we know what's going on out there. Like we're playing the game. We know. I got a lot of backlash after speaking up after, I think it was the third episode or so. And I said it in the tweets. I gave it time, you know, because I do know that it takes some time to get a confessional, or it might take an episode or two to get everybody squared away. But there were only 18 people on my season, not a full 20. And I gave it until episode 3 to be vocal, yeah, because I knew that while during my time out there, and Jeff had said it too, like I'm very educated. I'm, you know, what people say articulate, which is low-key a microaggression too, but I'm pretty well-spoken. I know how to use my words. I know how to get messages across. They loved pulling me away for walks, for confessionals. So that was the more frustrating part, was because I know you guys have the content. I know I was out there giving you guys confessionals every single day, multiple times a day, because you liked how I spoke and how I was able to articulate the game and the moving parts. And it was always this running joke at Comma Beach that I went on so many walks that I wasn't even able to strategize, and that I was away so much that I wasn't even able to, you know, strategize with the group because I was getting pulled for so many confessionals. So that was also frustrating that maybe the fans didn't realize, because I was getting called boring or getting called, you know, maybe you don't know how to talk in confessionals. And it's like, you guys weren't out there. Like I was out there doing plenty of confessionals. So they were there if they wanted to use me. And I felt like I just, you know, I wasn't somebody, I guess, that they wanted to edit in heavily. And, you know, I was outspoken about that because I felt like it was an in-service and an injustice to me as a Black woman and the only Black woman on my cast.
I know on Friday you're going to be part of the Tribes and Tribulations panel that's coming together to talk about the experiences of Black people on reality TV shows. That I'm sure you must have given some thought to this of, you know, are there ways that Survivor in particular could get better at doing this, having better representation in the shows?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, this is multifaceted. There's so many areas in which you could, you know, implement a solution that it's very easy if we're being real, Rob. You know what I mean? Like from the very basic of casting more people. And I know that, you know, people say it's gotten better over time. I argue that and push back on that a little bit, because although 37 and 39 were a little bit better, you know, I was squished right in the middle of those seasons and my season was atrocious with diversity. So I think that it's hit or miss, and it just depends when they want to hit the diversity target, you know? So I think that it needs to become a norm that seasons like Cook Islands and Fiji are like, those are kind of the rule, not the exceptions. Mm-hmm. And there are many arguments as to why they should or should not cast seasons like that. And we're not here to split hairs, but I think, you know, Survivor should be an equal opportunity game, an equal yeah, opportunity playing field. And I feel like if at bare minimum we look at the numbers, they're showing that minorities are not nearly as successful when the casts are not diverse. So why should that not be a stimulus to, why would you not want to, you know, cast more people? Like I know for certain if I would have had more diversity on my tribe that, you know, I would have had more allies to go into the merge with to possibly get me further. So it's just casting one, you know, but more importantly for me, because I know the importance of kind of top down hierarchies and, you know, corporations and whatnot, is more people of color in the executive type of roles, in the, you know, managing and director type of roles, because their visions are the ones who are, you know, demanded from the people below them. So if we are not represented at the top and thus, you know, given roles or given kind of action items from those individuals, then we are going to be missed in the representation. And that goes from down to casting and then editing. So I think it starts from the top down and getting more executives and people of color in these very prominent positions that are huge decision makers at the tables for these major networks and for these reality TV shows, because they are the ones who are making all the rules and all the decisions and ultimately have the say on what, you know, goes in and out of things. So I think that those are like two main solutions, and everything else I feel like kind of just fills in those gaps, you know, producers, editors, mm-hmm. all of that, just more representation. You can't have people tell stories of Black people if they are not familiar with Black people. So mm-hmm. I think that that's bottom line. We just need more representation behind the scenes, being able to culturally competently tell our stories.
I know Survivor introduced a lot of measures after season 39 in regards to making sure there was not any sort of harassment issues like we had with Kelly and Dan in season 39. That with looking at those measures, do you feel like that they also need to be having some sort of like experts on diversity and with more of a cultural awareness added to the, you know, in a similar capacity as the same sort of people that are sort of like the watchdogs who are hearing about any sort of like harassment of female contestants?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that actually I'm not too sure. Like, I think that there is a place for producers. Like, I'm not sure if you need an officer on the beach that's like, no, I spot racism, mm-hmm. get it out of here. Yeah. You know, I feel like that's already done in the producers who are there, who are listening in on every single castaway, know every single storyline that's happening. They are the people who step in when things happen. So I feel like, you know, in the same way that I had a racial incident on Kama Beach, there were producers present there filming that, or, you know, or who were hearing it and then pulling me away later to ask me about it. So they are the gatekeepers of the storylines and basically what's happening on the beach. So I feel like that's just a role that could simply be added to their job to ensure mm-hmm. that, as in the same way that sexual harassment is not being tolerated on beaches and amongst castaways, that racism is not being tolerated or perpetuated on the beach. However, where my hesitation comes in to like implement some sort of training for the castaways before they hit the beach is that I don't want to be, you know, drug along because I'm a minority. I don't want Jeff and company to come in and talk to us before we start the game and say, hey, you guys, in recent times, there's been a lot of minorities voted out first, so we don't want to do that. You know, bad on you guys if you do that. And then it's causing people to, within the game, start gathering and like, well, we can't vote Julie out first because she's, you know, the Black girl on our tribe. And Jeff said that's not a good look. So that's not how I want to play a game. That's not how I want to, you know, make my progress throughout the game. That's not how I want to, you know, get my final placement in the game. So mm-hmm. that's why I kind of say I don't necessarily think that that type of training is, in my opinion, is going to have legitimate yeah. result that wouldn't then trigger some sort of like, you know, conversation about it at camp and thus, you know, muddy the game. However, I think what alternatively could be done is that's something you need to ask about in casting, you know, like that is something you need to ask about in casting, about, you know, what type of people do you grow up with? You know, have you had much experience with Black people, Latino people, Native Americans, LGBT? These are types of things that you need to know about the people you are casting, because that is going to, you know, I always say that Survivor knows how it's going to play out as soon as they cast us. I feel like they know who's going to align with who, who's going to share commonalities with who. They get to know us pretty well. But that is something that I feel like, at least for me personally, was lacking in my casting, kind of questions about those aspects of who I feel comfortable with and whatnot. So I think that that would give them a better sense of people's biases and the kind of disparities before they happen. So I feel like if that is questions that you are contemplating in casting, then you will be able to see that this might not be a person we want to cast because it might perpetuate some of these very things that we're trying to combat. But like I said, it has to be, you know, it has to be a goal of yours to fix it in order to even, you know, start some of these solutions.
I think that Survivor is fortunate that they have not filmed a season since a lot of these discussions are being had, and they do have the opportunity to be able to take a good look at what were we going to do for season 41 and what was the cast that we're going to put together. Do you think that that some of the things that are talked about in the Survivor petition and that so many people are talking about in the Survivor community, do you think that there is a chance that these things will be implemented before the next season of Survivor gets filmed?
I'm hopeful, Rob. You know, I feel like that is kind of the advantage of the season being delayed and the casting being delayed, is that a lot of these conversations are being had. And with the Black Lives Matter movement happening basically as a result of quarantine and people not being able to be distracted right now, that CBS has a great opportunity going into this next season to take advantage of whatever quick changes, whatever quick solutions that they can right now. You know, obviously more systemic things, more systemic changes, like how I'm kind of requesting people behind the scenes and like the more hiring of diverse executives, those things might take more time. Yeah. So I'm patient, you know, I'll be patient, but something even like casting, like equal casting, that's something absolutely that this season 41 and 42, like they have a great window to implement a lot of change that can be seen directly by the viewers and by the, you know, the alumni of Survivor, to show that we hear you guys, you know, like we hear you, we've read you, what you're saying, the demands you've made, and we're trying, you know, work with us, we're trying. So I think that that's, like you said, it's a great time, and I'm hopeful that, you know, 41 is going to maybe look a little different. So yeah, we shall see.
Well, I've just been, you know, really proud of what the Black Survivor alumni have been working on, because that I feel like that so many of you have like really felt like we have a responsibility to try to get the show to fix this and to try to make things better for the show, for the, you know, whoever is going to come next and be a Black person to play in Survivor and make it fair for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think anybody in life, you know, if you are in a place of traversing a path or a trail that you see somebody else is going to go down later, that you would clear the weeds for them, right? Or you would be like, hey, somebody else I know is going to walk down this path, so I'm going to make the path a little easier for them to walk on. I do that in my normal life with mentoring pre-medical students that I know want to go to medical school. And I do the same thing with Survivor when, you know, I know that Black survivors are going to come after me. And if my voice can lend any type of support or change to make their experience better, or so that they do not have to go through some of the things that me and some of the fellow, you know, Black castaways have had to go through, then absolutely, why would I not do that? You know, I think that, and this might ruffle some feathers, but I think that there is this culture amongst Black former Survivor players as a whole to not be vocal for whatever reasons. But a lot of my, you know, a lot of my speculation is everybody in their head thinks that they're going to play again. Let's be real. You know, everybody thinks that they're the one that is going to get picked to play again. And it's like, it's not happening. Not everybody's playing again. So I think that people don't want to use their voice and often be, you know, the one to go against the grain and really speak out on a lot of issues about Survivor or about CBS, because they don't want to burn that bridge, or they don't want to be looked at as the one who isn't grateful for their experience. And hopefully I've, you know, come across that that is not my intention whatsoever. But I find more power in using my voice. I know that after I spoke out on my season, that certain changes were made as a result. And I find solace in that. You know, even I don't think I will ever play again. It just would never happen. Nor do I think I got an edit that would even show any indication that I would play again. So it's just like, why not use my voice for another cause to make the path easier? So, you know, I got a lot of people. And the reason I say that is because I got a lot of survivors who personally messaged me after my blog post dropped. It was like many different people, you know, legends that I watched and loved, yeah. White, Asian, you know, Latino, that all reached out and was like, hey, like, let me tell you about my experience out there with racism, or let me tell you about the season I was on in a similar incident with this person or with this kind of person. And I was like, wow, never heard it. You know, like we would never know these stories if people aren't choosing to speak out about them. And too often people just aren't choosing to speak out or having these conversations behind closed doors. And how is change ever going to come about as a result of that? So I find power in using my voice and, you know, demanding certain things to make the path for future Black survivors easier. And I'm, you know, completely confident and grateful to do that, you know, and I'm willing to be that one that speaks out, even if it ruffles feathers, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think you're doing an incredible job. I think something that I was thinking about the other day that I think is really interesting. So there may or may not be a person who's a Black person who is going to be on the next season of Survivor or the season after that. Do you have anything that you would want and might be listening that do you have anything that you would want that person to hear?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say to them, and I know it's easier said than done, and it's something I didn't even, you know, practice myself, but to be unapologetically yourself. Everybody else in the game gets to, and you should be afforded that same opportunity. And hopefully, you know, if you are listening and you are on a future season, you will be able to do so because your cast will be diverse enough that you do not have to code switch, that you do not have to, you know, stifle who you are or water down your personality so as to move through the game, you know, easier. But be unapologetically yourself and, you know, do your best in what feels right in your spirit. We all have to make decisions out there that are hard or, you know, try to find the intersection between who we are as a person and who we are as a contestant. So do what feels right for you and be unapologetically yourself.
Julia, do you have anything else that you would like to let the listeners know that I think that you have such an interesting story and I think that you have such a, you know, an interesting background in that you're able to, you know, have experiences in the Black community and among white people also. And I feel like that during this time, especially, I feel like that you have a very unique perspective on everything.
Right. So, yeah, I think I don't have too many, you know, last words that I could think of, but one thing that does definitely come to mind, and I said it during the round table, is that something that I've experienced in my life a lot is that when I speak out on racism or racist kind of events that have happened to me or people I know that, you know, white people or non-Black people often try to challenge those things or try to kind of negate or invalidate those experiences. And I find that very, you know, frustrating because you can't tell somebody about their own lived experience. If I'm telling you something, it's because I lived it and I experienced it and it's not up for debate. It was just telling you the story. So I think that especially when it comes to Survivor or reality television, when people speak out about their experiences, no matter what they are, you know, that they should be believed and that they should be taken seriously and that fans or whoever, you know, should be wary to invalidate the experience of those who are being brave enough to even speak out on certain experiences. because this is why a lot of people don't speak out or do not, you know, are not using their voices to make change, because people, you know, just aren't receptive or don't want to hear about some of the negatives of the shows that we love or things that we are trying to stay blind to or keep the wool over our eyes to. So I just kind of want to tell, you know, whoever's listening to be mindful of that, not only in this aspect of the game and in reality television, but also in your lives during these times. There's a lot of tough conversations going on at people's tables, in their schools, at their workplaces right now, in regards to race and you know, gender and LGBTQ plus population. And it's just, be respectful, just listen more than you talk, you know, especially if it's something that you are not an expert in or that you do not have the lived experiences yourself. Know your limitations, you know, and where in which you can lend your voice and where in which you should take a back seat and listen. And, you know, let's just all kind of work toward the better good or as a community, as a society, to all be understood and respected. So I'll leave with that.
Well, thank you for all that. Let me ask you just about your own experience with Survivor. Are you able to continue to be a fan of Survivor?
I am, Rob. I am. You know, as jaded as I am for my own season, it was more of like the personal aspect, you know, like you have to come to terms with your own personal experience out there and how it all played out. And then, like I said, kind of close the chapter, close the book of that experience and then move on. So for me, I love the show. I always have, you know, like I've watched since I was a kid, and it's one of those things now that I've played, I've kind of left the player aspect behind. I definitely have a new lens through which to view the show, but I'm still a fan, and I can't walk away just because we hit a bump in the road, but I sure will lend my voice if you guys want to make that road less bumpy, you know? So I can be a person who has the experience of playing, but also being a fan to help, you know, help the cause and to push the needle forward to be a better show for everyone. But I'm absolutely still a fan. I tune in every season, even no matter how busy I am. So I'm not going anywhere. Don't worry.
Julia, who's your Survivor hero?
My Survivor hero?
Yeah.
Jeremy. It has
Jeremy.
To be.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeremy is. He's just one of those guys that, and I haven't had a chance to meet him personally yet, but
yeah,
it's on my bucket list.
He's great.
We've chatted and we've talked, and he's just a great guy all around. And, you know, he's just such a dynamic Survivor player. And he's somebody that inspired me as, you know, watching the show and being a motivation for wanting me to get from the couch to the beach. So he's just a hero in all regards, and also in his personal life, the work he does as a firefighter and all of that. So he's just one of those people that he's also like a special person.
And a great dad too.
Absolutely. Great family man, great castaway, great firefighter. He's just, come on, how do you not love Jeremy? So that's definitely one of my Survivor heroes.
Julia, what else are you watching besides Survivor? Do you have any other recommendations?
Yeah, so, you know, being in quarantine, I have ran the gambit of like Hulu, Netflix, everything. So I do watch The Challenge on MTV.
Oh.
That's another one that, you know, with Survivor has been on so long that I grew up watching, and similar, you know, in the same way that it's just like, I can't let go of it. It's like, ooh, like, so I watch that one, of course, every Wednesday as well. What else do I watch? I watch a lot of like Hulu and Netflix. There's this really great show I'll recommend. Me and Reem actually talk about it. It's a show on Hulu called Rami. It's about basically a
I've heard of this.
It's really great. It's so funny, about a first generation Muslim kid growing up in the world. And it's so great, so hilarious. It's a comedy. It recently won like a huge award.
And
so
he's a comedian or in the show, or he's a comedian in real life?
He's a comedian in real life, but he's also the main character in his own show.
Yes.
So he plays himself in the show. So hilarious. It's like the satirical comedy type of sitcom. It's only 30 minutes and it has me rolling. And it also kind of going on this theme of race and acceptance and tolerance. It definitely, I know a lot of Egyptians and Muslims from medical school and whatnot, but they're not a group that I'm super familiar with their culture. But the show definitely shows me some glimpses of their culture and what it's like. And it has sparked a lot of dialogue with those people in my real life about their culture. So that's another case in which, like, even television, you know, like, can open your gates and your perspective to other people who you might not know as much about, and really provide you a lens through which to see people who are different than you. So definitely give it a recommendation. Me and Rain talk about it and laugh about Rami all the time.
Okay. Well, Julia, this was so nice to get to finally catch up with you. If people want to follow you more, where should people follow you on social media?
So all my social media handles are pretty much the same. So Instagram and Twitter, yes, are at the Julia Carter. So the Julia Carter, my name. And yeah, you guys can follow me, see what feathers I'm ruffling or what I'm doing in my life.
Yes.
And thank you, Rob, for having me on and providing me a space to talk openly and kind of share whatever I wanted to share about. It is very appreciated.
Well, thank you for coming here and talking with me about this experience and really opening yourself up, because that I know it's not easy for you to do. And in the times that you have opened up, you know, on social media, that you also have been a person who has gotten a lot of pushback on social media. So I'm sure you must be apprehensive anytime you are opening up, but I really admire that you continue to do so.
Thank you. You know, I find more power in being transparent. The pushback I'm getting used to. There's more benefit. The benefits outweigh the risks, mm-hmm. and the pushback I can tolerate. I'm strong. So
yeah.
To continue using my voice,
you're very strong. I get like one negative comment, and then I'm like,
it happens. Yeah. Social media is brutal. It's brutal.
Yeah, but no, I really appreciate it. And then check out, of course, we heard from Jatia earlier. Check out Julia as part of the Tribes and Tribulations panel. One more time, how do people find that?
The Tribes and Tribulation panel will be streaming live on YouTube. The link will be posted on my Twitter as well as JatiaPhD/TNT. Or you can just look up hashtag Tribes and Tribulations. That'll kind of loop you into all of the promo stuff around the event.
Yeah. And I'm sure it'll be available after the fact too.
Yep. It'll be recorded so people can view after the fact. So definitely stay tuned. It should be a lively discussion.
Okay. Julia Carter, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate you.
Okay. Appreciate you too. Everybody, there you go. Julia Carter on the podcast. And how great was Julia? Again, I really appreciate the survivors that come here. Look, I know it's easy to come on here and recap an episode of the show. Sometimes it's easy. Other times it's harder. But I mean, to open yourself up like that, I really am very grateful to the people that want to come on here and, you know, speak their mind and have conversations about stuff that everybody might not love to hear, but I really am very happy that we're able to do so, and that Survivor players, you know, have the confidence that they can have that conversation here with me. So really happy about the direction that this series has been going in. Again, if you missed it on Wednesday night, check out that panel that Sean put together. I thought that was really great. It's about 2 hours long, up on our YouTube page and also on the podcast feed. And then I'm sure Friday night is also going to be a good one. The Tribes and Tribulations panel, which we talked about with Jatia and Julia, which is going to be streamed live. And then you can watch that after the fact. Hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Thank you for listening to these podcasts that I'm doing. I really appreciate that. And I hope to continue to bring you more voices from the Black Survivor community as we continue along with this series. Hope you're doing okay. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.